Hey, what's up, everyone? It is a Friday here as we record, and I wish that it was like the end of a normal week, but I don't work normal jobs. I work ministry. So I'm like, I still gotta go. I still gotta make it. We can do this.
Sunday's the new Monday.
No, Monday. It's very true. Sunday's the new Monday. Monday has become my Saturday? Monday is my Saturday. Yes. Monday is my like take a big freaking breath. But I didn't do that this Monday. I had a couple of things that were essential that I scheduled. And so I did some emotional work and some physical work. And I am feeling it today on Friday. How are you feeling today on Friday, Jack?
I have those Friday afternoon sleepies.
I know. I'm like, we just had a snack in between recording, and I'm like, isn't it time for a nap? But I'm really curious what this question is that you have for our minisode from one of our listeners.
Ooh, she's curious.
Yeah, maybe it'll
She'll
wake me up a little.
Try anything. It's a question from one of our listeners. They ask, what are your thoughts on how to make queer and Christian spaces more accessible for disabled and neurodiverse people?
I think this is a great question, and I've actually had to think about the answer because I feel like we've done it so well that people have said, how did you do that? Mm-hmm. You and I have done that really well. And people are like, how'd you do that? And we're like, oh, give us a second. We'll have an answer. Right? Because like, I feel like we there have been things we've done intentionally, but there have been a lot of like things that have come naturally to us because we ourselves are neurodiverse. We ourselves are closely connected to disability. Mm-hmm. So we're automatically thinking about that. Right?
Yeah. And I think just trying to love a community well, you'll end up
meeting the needs,
adopting like practices that are beneficial to that community, and sometimes so slowly that, or we didn't realize that we'd made like a list of bunch of things to help foster accessible communities.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. But I think it comes back to, you know, this past Sunday at the UCC church, we were talking about, you know, the welcome table, and I feel like that's the heart of it, is really having diverse voices at the table to have those conversations about what might be missing. Mm-hmm. And really having the ability to listen.
Right.
Because I feel like there's plenty of places that are faking it. Like, oh, we have a Black pastor and we have a lesbian pastor. Yeah. And they're just like, they're listing off the all the minority groups that they're covering, and they're not consulting them.
Right.
Like, they're not actually saying, What are we doing wrong? Or what can we be doing better, mm-hmm, to serve this community? They're just filling a space that they think needs to be filled, and doing the minimal work.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the things that comes up immediately for me is, it's admittedly one of the more obvious things to like, for Christian spaces to like, make the space accessible for those of us who have like motor physical disabilities.
Yep.
Like, I used to attend this church earlier in the pandemic, and when they started having in-person services again, they had this like nice courtyard where we had like outdoor services and could be socially distant. And I asked one of the priests, like, hey, what is the like handicap accessible route to get to the courtyard? Like, it was a pointed question, like a lot of questions I asked. I meant to like show that there was not adequate signage for people to know where to go. I feel like this is a problem with established churches that, like, people who go there have been going there kind of for forever.
Mm-hmm.
They don't think about how new people experience the church.
Exactly.
It can be very inaccessible in like lots of ways, like physically, socially, et cetera. And he said, oh, this path that like everybody takes to get in, that's the accessible path. Well, that path narrows at one point between like a corner of the church and a telephone pole to about like 18 inches. Like most wheelchairs could not navigate that.
Right.
And I asked the question partly because, like a lot of Episcopal churches, is predominantly an older congregation, but there were no people who were in wheelchairs in attendance or who used assistive devices except for like me. And I wondered, like, what's with this oddly mobile elderly congregation?
Right.
Like, well, other people couldn't get to the space where the services were being held. Mm. And they never stopped to ask themselves, like, whom are we excluding? Like, why are there segments of our community that aren't represented in our congregation? Like, I know that some people in churches would respond to like, well, but no, people in wheelchairs have been coming, and so that's not like a need. Like, well, people don't know that your space is accessible.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to gamble that. Like, it's safest for us to assume that spaces, especially faith spaces, unfortunately, are inaccessible unless it's like demonstrated to us otherwise. Because the American with Disabilities Act, like 20 years old, like requires places to be accessible to the disabled, but religious institutions are exempt.
I don't understand that. That makes zero sense to me.
Like, they didn't have to make their church accessible, but like churches above, perhaps above all places, or at least like churches should be at, like at the top of places that make being accessible a priority.
Something that I valued in us having to go online with our group and the groups that we've helped co-lead has been the accessibility for those that might have severe anxiety or feel triggered or overwhelmed by a situation, especially something as big as church.
Yeah.
And they feel like they can enter a space without being trapped, and they can exit when they're ready or when they need to.
Yeah.
And that's been a benefit that I've seen, especially for those dealing with those kinds of mental health issues. And it's been really awesome, you know, or to like just turn off their camera, you know?
Yeah.
Even to simplify even more, like those of my introverted friends who would be less likely to have the energy to go out and do some social event are more likely to log into a Zoom meeting and engage when they feel they have the energy. And I love that. And I feel like that's something that we weren't always thinking about when we were meeting in person.
Right.
You know? The other thing that's come to the forefront, I feel as well, has been like captioning. Zoom as a brand has had to improve its captioning ability so that it could be more accessible for more people. And it probably needed to have done that way sooner. But now there are a lot more apps that are excelling in that feature because of the need was greater.
Yeah, that's great.
And I feel like there's certain ways that we've been able to see improvements that have then just drawn attention to things, needs mm-hmm. that we've had that we weren't seeing before.
Yeah. Like sometimes I've learned things by like not doing it well mm-hmm. and getting feedback. Like I was leading this like limited term Gospels in Disability Bible study earlier in the pandemic. And one of the people who had been coming said, can you take me off the list? Like, I just can't attend to a discussion that long without, that goes that long without a break. And I thought about it and thought, like, that's accidentally like great advice.
Right.
A lot of people in our circles have attention issues, including me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, like, sorry to see you go. Just so you know, like, because you said something, like, I started instituting a 10-minute break, like, in the middle of discussion. So thank you for saying something. Like, it really helped. Like, I love just having the, like, little bit of a pause in a Bible study to, like, use the restroom in, like, a less awkward way, like, especially right. as a person facilitating it.
Yep.
Or to, like, more often I would have, like make a cup of coffee and have a snack. And for me, who's, like, social, but, like, still a pretty extreme introvert, like, it helped me to have just, like, a little bit of quiet, like,
mm-hmm.
kind of, like, turned down the lights. I just had, like, a little bit of break from people, and it made longer Zooms so much more accessible to me and people who have attention issues, introverts, etc.
Right.
I think another thing that, like, we did in one of our groups, and I didn't think about how helpful it was until, like, I saw the fruit of it, was just trying to creating and fostering a culture where people aren't expected to act just one way
mm-hmm.
or to have just one kind of relationship to the group itself.
Yeah.
Like, I'd been in and led, like, a ton of evangelical Bible studies, and there were things that I hated about them. So
yeah.
when we were doing our own, I, like, wanted really specifically not to replicate those facets. Stuff like kind of like socially mandated frequent attendance. And like, if you didn't show up, like, you better have a damn good excuse.
Right, which is bullshit.
Next, like, if you don't go to Bible study, next time people see you, they'd be like, missed you at Bible study.
You know how many times I had to, like, especially in with online, I had to correct how I was saying a really genuine missed you
mm-hmm.
because I didn't want to trigger people.
Right.
Ugh.
That or, like, punctuality. Like, I have a hard time being on time. Part of that is attention issues. Part of it is, I don't know, I think being too much of a slave to clocks is bullshit. So
especially for things that we're, like, what, passionate about, like, we love, we care about, and that mm-hmm. are, like the minute that's one of my Monday rules, as funny as that sounds. Is that I don't have a time clock.
Mm-hmm.
It changes everything about. I could do lots of things during that day and still feel refreshed by it as long mm-hmm. as there's not a time clock.
Yeah, for me, it was like half ADHD, like half queer liberation.
Heard
like,
that. Amen.
Like if you show up 5:15, half an hour late, whatever, if you need to leave early, like, don't feel bad about that. Like, we all have different lives and different commitments and different energy levels, and that's all fine. Like, you're welcome here, whether you're here on time every week, here for the whole time, or you come once in a while, like as you need, as you have the energy. I think.
Now, if we could just treat ourselves that way.
Oh, I know, right? I think, like, without even meaning to, or like meaning to do so for other reasons, there are a lot of accessible features about our group where, like, other people who are neurodiverse like us have been kicked out or edged out of groups, made to feel excluded, or like been explicitly excluded from other groups and landed in our group. And I love the, like, the diversity that ended up creating.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's one of my favorite things about our group and our community.
Mm-hmm. Something that I've been trying to figure out how to navigate better with Zoom is how to make it more accessible for introverts and or people with social anxiety. Like, it's a problem in-person groups have. I think it's exacerbated by Zoom and, like, its audio processing limitations. Like, sometimes a quieter person in our group will start talking and, like, Zoom doesn't pick up their feed in time. Mm-hmm. And, like, one of us bulldozers, like, doesn't notice they're talking and just, like, talks over them. Mm-hmm. Like, that can be really painful to people with social anxiety. Like, they have a hard time speaking up and they finally summon up the courage to say something. And they get completely railroaded.
Mm-hmm. I think what I've seen in our group that's been really nice has been, I know I've tried to instigate this as a bulldozer, but I think I've noticed from other people as well, like, can I pause you for a second? I think so-and-so was trying to make a statement. What was that really quick? And then just, like, giving them their voice back,
mm-hmm.
just being cognizant, like, mm-hmm. actually, like, recognizing and being comfortable with calling that out, you know?
Yeah.
I think one of the ways that we've become really accessible for individuals who are feeling overwhelmed by Zoom and who don't want to commit in that way is through the podcast. Like, mm-hmm. we still create that same space of comfort and ability to connect, and they also have the ability to press pause. So right. I feel like that's been another way that we've opened up. One of the ways I'd love to see us grow is, and unfortunately, it's a financial investment. So it's taken some time for us to do it, would be to eventually have a transcription for those of our hard of hearing family.
Oh, yeah, that'd be great.
I know there are apps out there that will do some of the work, but it would be cool if we could do that eventually. I hope to do that within a year of our podcast. So, mm-hmm. I've been looking into that just cause I know it's something that we have excelled at, but there's still ways we can grow.
Yeah, absolutely.
So honestly, like, this question is such a good question, although it is very broad, it's very general, and we're doing our best to answer it from, like, our personal perspectives. What have mm-hmm. we've done to improve things? But I would love to hear from our listeners if there's any, like, specific way that you have seen a group or led a group to be more accessible. We would love to hear it. I would absolutely love to hear it.
We, like, sort of didn't talk about specifically queer spaces. We should do a part two of this.
Yeah, that's a really good idea. I think it's hard because the spaces that we've existed in have been queer that we've built, and so that means there's a lot of intersectionality with neurodivergent people. Mm-hmm. So we've been very encouraged to make better decisions. You know, mm-hmm. I think it's almost harder when you're in a group that is very same to make the effort to really expand and grow. And queer spaces can be that way, but we've been fortunate to see a lot of diversity because of the queerness.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, I agree. I think we could do a part two at some point.
Yes.
And dive into it more. But this is a mini-sode.
So you're not going to get it today. If you want to connect with us, if you have a story you'd like to share, a question you want us to tackle, or an idea for an episode, reach out to us at lavnermafia@gmail.com or on Instagram and Twitter at lavmafia, L-A-V-M-A-F-I-A. And if you like what we're doing, go on to patreon.com/lavmafia and consider lending us your support so we can keep doing this.
We would love it. All right, gorgeous babes, be fierce, keep the faith,
and don't fuck it up. Hey, Lavender Mafiosas, as we continue to make fun, sex positive, thoughtful queer Christian content, we're so pleased by how many of you invite us into your homes to spend some time with us each week. It's like we're part of the same queer, extended, chosen family. And I don't feel like we would really feel like family if I didn't beg you for money. So here goes. First, we really appreciate those of you who partner with us on Patreon already, because we need your support to continue the work we're doing. And there are even more things that we want to do, like build a website, make Lavender Mafia merch, provide opportunities for community online, in person, and to make more podcast content for you all. With what's been going on in our country lately, with new threats to queer health and safety all the time, it means more than ever to me to be doing this. And I really appreciate those of you who've partnered with us to make it possible for us to keep doing this. If you want to be one of these people, please consider going to patreon.com/lavmafia and signing up to be one of our patrons. Thanks, and don't fuck it up.